Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Welcome to the Intercooler Podcast.
Hello, everybody. This is episode 81. Dan Prosser and Andrew Frankel with you here. Andrew, we're talking car films. This is the 81st episode of the Intercooler Podcast, and we haven't done one on car films or motorsport films. We've probably spoken about individual films now and again, but not a whole episode of the podcast.
No, we did a chunk on the Schumacher documentary, didn't we, in a previous podcast a week or two back. But no, we've never done one, and it's crazy, isn't it? Because when you're down the pub talking about cars, it's always one of the subjects that comes up. So we're going to have a trot through what we think are the best ones, and a few of the clunkers too.
Yeah, and we're talking car films, we're talking car chases, we're going to talk motorsport films. And there's an entire franchise of car films that you haven't apparently seen a single minute of. Is that true? I'm not even going to mention the franchise yet, but I think you know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about, yes. I hang my head in shame. Are they any good?
We'll come to those later on.
Okay.
Okay. Right, now I'm going to disappoint you within the first minute of this podcast, because some of the great ones that you're going to talk about now,
yes,
I've not seen.
Oh, dear.
I haven't seen...
What?
I haven't seen Le Mans.
What?
I haven't seen Grand Prix.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm serious. If I didn't have such a busy weekend, I'd put that right over the next couple of days, but...
Okay. So we need to get you around. You need to be educated.
Okay.
In the way...
Let that education begin now.
Okay.
I've heard about Le Mans, and it's the McQueen film, isn't it? In the 1917s. I've even had a conversation with Herbert Linger, who was drafted in to do the driving in Steve McQueen's plays.
Yes.
I'm well aware of the film. I just haven't ever bothered to sit down and watch it. What am I missing out on?
Okay, so there are two schools of thoughts with this film. One is that it's the greatest piece of cinema that's ever been filmed. The other is that it's a total mess, and actually both positions are utterly defensible depending on where you're coming as a film, which way you'd expect there to be a story, a sort of narrative with a sort of start. I mean, it's just a joke. It's basically, the entire film is an excuse for Steve McQueen to go mucking about with his mates in Le Mans cars, and there is some preposterous kind of love interest story in there, and you're sort of watching there, you just think, can we just get back to the 917th Street, because none of it rings even slightly true. But the reason you should watch it is the cinematography is absolutely extraordinary. This film was made over 50 years ago, little things like, they actually entered a car into the race, into the 1970 Le Mans, a Porsche 908, which was loaded with cameras and every pit stop. I mean, it actually finished the race, but I think it had spent so long having films changed in its pit stops, it was unclassified because it didn't do the sort of required distance. But Jonathan Williams drove that. I think actually with your mate Linger, I think.
Does ring a bell.
And so when you see the start of the film, and it's all the cars, and it's like an on-car shot and all the cars streaming off into the distance, that's all real. So there's lots of stuff in there that is real. Obviously, the cars are amazing. But what McQueen did And McQueen is not a person I'm a fan of at all, because I think that from a personal point of view, he was pretty reprehensible. But the film he created, because he shot everything at race speed, he didn't want to do anything. I mean, there are no special effects in it, because everything is as you see it. So if you see a car, a 917, looking like it's doing 210 miles an hour down the Mulsanne Straight, that's because it's a 917 doing 210 miles an hour down the Mulsanne Straight. And when the cars are sort of, you know, getting sideways and the driver's battling for control, that's because that's what's happening. So it has, and there are some incredible shots where, you know, they're sort of tracking shots which are inches away from the car. And as a spectacle to the car fan, to anybody else, the films are nonsense. But if you love that stuff, I'm looking over your left shoulder to your picture of your 917 at Daytona. If you love that stuff, you can't not love this. You can't not be spellbound by this film. It's almost not. I mean, don't think of it as a film. Just think of it as almost as a documentary, and it's amazing.
That does sound... So you've actually answered one of my questions there. I was going to say, is it just a motorsport perverts thing?
Yes, it is, absolutely.
Mrs. Frankel sit down and watch it?
Mrs. Frankel would... I mean, she would run as fast as she possibly could in the other direction. But there are some great bits in it. So the only bit of trickery is there are a couple of big crashes in it. One to a Ferrari, one to a Porsche. Except they weren't Ferraris or Porsches. They were both loaded T70s wearing Ferrari and Porsche bodywork. And they were radio controlled. That's quite interesting, and because it's all done in sort of slow-mo, you can actually see one of them. I can't remember which one it is. I think it's the Porsche when that sort of crashes, and the bodywork starts coming underneath it. You can see the fact that you can see the yellow Lola that's underneath it. So I guess because they didn't want to write off a 917 or a real 512, but the way those accidents are done are pretty convincing. They had some proper trouble making it. Little things like they completely ran out of money and had to change the director and that sort of thing. But, you know, Derek Bell was in a car which blew up with him in it, burnt him quite badly. There's actually a picture of him with his face just completely. And then David Piper had an enormous accident, the one in which he lost his leg. Making the film. And if you see the picture of the car afterwards, it's literally a bit of tangled metal with a seat, and there's nothing else. Frankly, you'd be very surprised that he came out of that without having lost an awful lot more than his leg. I'm not even sure that we can, you know, carry on being friends if you haven't seen that. You need to go and see it. You need to be able to talk to me about it. I mean, I'm genuinely interested, because everybody I've spoken to about it has seen it 1,000 times, and we always say the same sort of thing. So I'd love to speak to someone who'd only just seen it for the first time.
Like I shouldn't have confessed that just now.
No.
But, I mean, it is a very compelling proposition, the fact that it was actually shot at Le Mans, and the fact that it gives you such an insight into that place during such an incredible era.
And all the people who are doing the driving... You know, basically what happened was, you know, they filmed the race in June 1970, and then they just booked the circuit for months, and all the drivers stayed. And so all the people doing all the driving, they're all the people who'd been at Le Mans a few weeks earlier. So from that point of view, it's completely authentic. Fascinating film, if not necessarily a very good one.
Okay. I'll dig it out. I will put this right.
Good.
But also, I will put not having seen Grand Prix right. Is this the Polanski film?
No, it's a Frankenheimer film.
Okay, the Polanski one is Weekend of a Champion, isn't it? It's the Jackie Stewart one.
That's the Jackie Stewart one, yeah, and that's documentary. Yeah.
Right.
So Grand Prix is not a documentary at all. Grand Prix is a proper movie. And that was shot in... So it predates Le Mans. And it was shot in 65 or 66. And funnily enough, it's about Grand Prix racing, not sports car racing. And actually, it's a better film than Le Mans. It's got a less preposterous plot. it's got just as many big names in it. Some of them actually have, you know, Graham Hill's in there. I think he's actually got a character name in it. And you see all these drivers around, and you'll see, you know, there's Richie Ginther, and there's Mike Spence, and there's Graham. I mean, they're all there. The driving, the cinematography is—it's a much more artistically created film than Le Mans, I would say. Frankenheimer did an incredible job with this, and there are some fabulous sequences in it. And what Frankenheimer didn't have, which Steve McQueen had—I mean, Frankenheimer didn't have an unlimited number of Formula One drivers for the duration of his film to drive the cars, and he had certain actors playing racing drivers who literally didn't know how to drive. So, you know, the kind of one of the two main stars, Brian Bedford, literally didn't know how to drive, and I think he might have just passed his test, but that's why when you see him, he's always got dark goggles on and a big balaclava pulled up, because it's not him.
It's not him.
Because it's not him. By contrast, James Garner, Jim Rockford, who was like the other lead character in it, he was an unbelievable driver. To the extent that sometimes when you're looking at the other drivers who didn't know how to drive, you're actually looking at James Garner. He doubled. He basically was a stunt driver as well as the... You know, so, and he was as quick as any of them. And I met him once, as you do, at Monza. And he was quite old and his knees were a bit shot. But we just talked and talked and talked. And he just loved racing. He used to go off and do sort of the Baja 1000. So his insurance wouldn't let him do circuit racing, which is what he really wanted to do. But they couldn't stop him doing that sort of thing. So that's what he did for years and years. And, you know, and he shared cars with some really impressive people and did really, really well. And in the film, there's an unbelievable bit in the film. He's driving, they call it a Yamura, but it's obviously meant to be a Honda. It's like a white Formula One car. And there's a bit in the film where this car is required to blow up. And it's at Brands Hatch. And so the idea is that it comes down the pit straight and it catches fire, and you know the stuntman has to stop the car and bail it. Stuntman didn't turn up that day.
Okay, didn't fancy it.
No. So Garner went, well, I'll do it. And they had, so what they did, you remember telling me, they had butane bottles in the car, which they said to him, well, if you just press this button, it's going to go woomph a little bit, but it'll be kind of fine, and you can just, and we'll just sort of make it look, well. And he said when he pressed it, basically, and you can see it in the film, the whole thing just goes kaboom. And he's in there going, oh, shit, 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 shit. And he's got it on the grass and he's bailing out of it. And that is James Garner doing that. I mean, it is bloody extraordinary. Hell. It is absolutely extraordinary. I mean, yes, it's hard to imagine, I don't know, Ryan Gosling or someone like that agreeing to do that today. But it's a really, really good film. It's actually got some... you know, that you can emotionally invest in it in some of the characters, and obviously you get to see all the old circuits because it's not just based at one of them, in their pomp, and you get to see what they were like to drive around and all those beautiful old cars, and it's a brilliant film. It's probably my favourite.
Oh wow. Okay, I really feel like I'm letting you down by not having seen them. I will put this right. But it's interesting that you talk about the sort of authenticity of the action sequences in those two films, because
yes,
that is what frustrates me about the more modern motorsport films. Yeah. Even so, Le Mans 66, I enjoyed watching that film, but the driving sequences never look right.
No.
They just...
No.
I don't know.
That's
they seem too slow.
That was made by a director who was a very gifted director, but he wasn't a car guy at all. And he completely admitted to that. And also, I suspect I've learnt the lesson of, certainly of Le Mans. And, you know, Le Mans was a complete flop. You know, nobody, I mean, it was panned. It was a commercial disaster. And so maybe, to you or me, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I don't know if you've seen... Driven. You seen Driven? So Driven is the made about 20 years. Sylvester Stallone is an IndyCar driver.
No.
It's absolutely preposterous. It really, I mean, I'll tell you, it's even more preposterous than Days of Thunder. I mean, it's an absolutely ridiculous film. You know, it's, you know, they're going around ovals and, you know, and you know, he's there against his nemesis. And so what he decides to do to go faster is, you know, change down and put his foot down. And so you see the gidget and it's just, it's just a joke. But, you know, the Frankenheimer and the McQueen movies, they are amazing because I guess it was more difficult actually to do special effects back then. You know, they didn't have green screens or, you know,
CGI
or any kind of CGI. So you kind of had to do it. I mean, they did do in the Frankenheimer film, they did, because they couldn't get enough Formula One cars. So they got some Formula Juniors, which were little four cylinder things. And they put like big spaghetti exhausts on them to make it look like Formula One cars. Which is, you know, fine, fair enough. But the, you know, but you know, everything else, they pretty much is pretty much as you see it, and it's also, you know, the noise of the cars. You know, they're all so authentic. You know, you've got the Ferrari, you know, V12, and you know, all the V8s, and yeah, it's a really good film. In fact, I might have to go and watch it tonight.
Okay. When you were talking about Driven, you referenced. you spoke about shifting down a gear and pushing your foot to the floor to go faster.
Yes.
And that could, you could have been describing this franchise that you haven't watched a minute of. So I know you might not be aware of this, but that is absolutely a proper Fast and Furious trope. Okay, it's just in every single one of the films, to go faster, you change gear and then push your foot down and then change gear some more. Just change gear more and you'll be faster.
Put your foot down
than
a bit harder.
Yeah.
I didn't realise it was that easy. So that's the mistake I've been making all these years.
Just try it next time you're on track. Don't do it on the road. That's dangerous.
No. But so hang on. So change gear. Do you change down or up a gear? You change down a gear, presumably.
Either. It doesn't matter.
Either. And then
you
put your foot down. And then you win the race. It's that
you
easy.
You do need 14 gears to win a race in these films. but yeah, okay. So... I mean, you must have seen
how many have there been?
I think there have been 9. I think the 9th came out recently.
How many have you seen?
Well, that's an interesting point. So, the first one came out, I don't know when it was, but it must have been 20 years ago or something. And so I was a teenager and quite into the sort of modified car thing. I thought it was the coolest thing going. And it felt like a car person's film. You know, there's enough... sort of attention paid to the details, enough respect paid to the cars themselves.
What's it about? Is it about sort of illegal street racing and that sort of thing?
It is about illegal street racing, but also sort of gang crime and robberies, and you know, holding up wagons and so on. And there's an undercover cop. So yeah, I mean, there's a bit of a narrative, bit of a plot going on.
They always try and stick a love interest in there somewhere?
Oh, of course. Yeah, yes. Of course. There's definitely a couple of those. But when you're a 15-year-old kid, you know, it's the coolest thing. And I just loved it. And there were great driving sequences, despite all the gear changing. And then, yeah, I mean, the first few were, for me, sort of similar to that. They were enjoyable and watchable. And you appreciated the car details and the driving sequences. And, you know, they do some really quite lively things with those cars. Some of it preposterous, of course, but some of it clearly real and beautifully done. However, for me, that franchise, Fast and Furious, was a bit of a victim of its own success because it became so huge. And it's now one of the biggest grossing franchises ever. I think is it a Universal franchise? If it's Universal, it's their biggest ever. So it's an enormous thing. And I feel like it became... so big that they realised they had to totally broaden it out. And that's when The Rock became involved. That's when it became an action franchise more than a car and driving franchise. And it just got sillier and sillier and sillier to the point where you're watching it. And as a car person, you know, they'll be doing some bizarre street race somewhere. And the bloke wins by going into reverse and out accelerating the guy who's in fifth gear. You know, and it's, yeah, it's, you just, right. you watch okay. that sort of thing unfold and you just think, come on. And I think they've just had to go dafter and dafter with it just to sort of keep ahead of themselves. I haven't seen the last one, which probably says a lot. I just didn't bother. But I think they went into space.
I'm sorry?
I think they went into space. I really should check this before saying on the podcast. But, you know, they just have to find a way to keep turning it up and turning it up and besting themselves.
Do you think that they will get to a stage where they kind of, even they realise that they disappeared up their own backsides, and then they'll just, I mean, Bond does this every so often, don't they, doesn't it? I mean, Bond gets more and more ridiculous, and then suddenly, you know, Daniel Craig will turn up and just bring it back to basics and, you know, completely redefine the whole thing all over again, and then it's fine. So maybe the Fast and the Furious 10 will be a really sort of pared down, you know, nitty gritty, proper enthusiast film.
It would be great if it was really stripped back and just about street racing in LA or somewhere. That would be cool. But, I mean, I think it's the last one they'll do. So I feel like they're going to have to take it, you know, even further into space. They're going to have to go to Mars or something. I think that's what they'll do. I can't see them, you know, stripping it right back, cool as that would be for car people. You mentioned Bond. And I'm only bringing this up because I saw the new one last night. Have you seen it?
I have seen it. Oh, I have seen it.
It's good,
no
isn't
spoilers.
It? No spoilers. No, we won't give anything away.
All I know, but if you haven't seen it, and I promise I won't dwell on this, I promise you this, when you leave the cinema, you will be speaking about it. It's not one of those films where you come out of the cinema and think to yourself, oh, that was a fun way of spending a couple of hours, and then, you know, where's my curry? You'll come out of it. Your jaw will probably be on the floor, and you'll be thinking about it for days, and you'll be talking about it. So, yeah. Whether you actually, you know, I know some people who didn't really like it very much, but they were still talking about it. Yeah. Yes. Sorry.
I loved it. It was quite un-Bondy at points. You know, I thought for the first 10 minutes I'd walked into the wrong screen.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like a Bond opening sequence, does it?
No, but it doesn't. No.
I thought it was fantastic. And there's some great car content in there. Some good
thanks
driving
to our,
sequences.
Thanks to our mate Marrow.
Yeah, and Higgy, Mark Higgins. There's some brilliant stuff going on there. I loved it. But we're not really here to talk about Bond films. So we've done Fast and Furious. We've done a couple of the old motorsport. Let's do Le Mans 66.
Yeah.
Ford versus Ferrari.
Yes.
You've spoken about this film on the podcast before because you think it's Shelby versus Ford, actually, don't you?
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. I did enjoy it. It's not for me, and it's not for you because it's not a real hardcore car nuts film. I tell you what I really, really liked about it is that Ken Miles finally got the appreciation that he deserved, because Ken Miles has, or you know, he died, whatever it was, 55 years ago. He's never been appreciated. People have known, most people won't have even heard of him. When you hear Miles, you know, they might think John Miles, who's completely unrelated, who was Jim Clark's teammate. But you know, what Ken Miles did, particularly with the GT40 program, was amazing. And it's great that has been recognised finally. As a film, I thought it was quite nicely done. I mean, there were so many. I think I wrote something on the, I don't know whether I did it on the Apple or the Instagram site, but just listing the inaccuracies in it. and, you know, entire Le Mans 24 Hours, which were part of that story, just omitted. And putting, you know, Ken Miles in Le Mans that he didn't take place in. And, you know, that bit where Carroll Shelby goes up in flames at Le Mans. Well, no, he didn't. Roy Salvadori did. In an Aston Martin at Goodwood, so they've nicked bits here and there, and if you know about this stuff, it's annoying, but if you don't, it doesn't matter. And I think for most people, probably aren't quite as sad as I am. I don't have that sort of, you know, obsessional interest with it, and I think they'll just think it's just an interesting story. And I think the lead characters, I think Christian Bale's amazing. I think Matt Damon's good enough. And Yeah, I think it's an. It's not the sort of thing that stays with you. That is a film that you watch, you enjoy, and then move on from.
Mm.
Would you agree?
I enjoyed watching it. I've said that some of the driving sequences were frustrating. They weren't frustrating. They just sort of stand out a little bit to someone who knows what these things should look like. But I just enjoyed that. Yeah, you're right. That the Ken Miles story was told, that the GT40 story was told, but also to a mainstream audience. It was a big film, wasn't it? It was all over the place.
Yeah.
And I just enjoy it when our little corner of the world gets some spotlight in a positive way. When people were really going, wow, those cars are beautiful. The way they were developed, the sounds that they make, the challenge of driving them around.
That's it.
Circuit de la Sarthe for 24 hours. You know, there's a real appreciation for all that it takes to do that stuff. And that's what I enjoyed about that film.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. Yeah. Even though Enzo Ferrari wasn't at Le Mans in 1966.
Okay, enough.
Don't get me started.
Right, should we do both Gone in 60 Seconds?
Yes. Yes, so there's the brilliant one, and then there's the, you know, I can barely remember seeing the second one. Was it Nicolas Cage?
It was Nicolas Cage, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just hopeless. But the original one, if you haven't seen it, it was made by this lunatic called H.B. Halicki, who I think was a stuntman, and I think he did most of the driving in it. And, I mean, it's not a film. It's a filmed car chase. And he basically, it's not quite this, but it's basically, you know, he nicks a car on the opening shot and the last shot is kind of, you know, and then the entire film is a car. But it's, it's very much a kind of cult film, but it's a lot of fun and well worth a watch.
Mm.
And they don't bother with love interest or anything like that. It's just cars. I think I'm
seeing a theme here with you, actually, Andrew. So the new Gone in 60 Seconds. Again, it's one of those that I probably first watched when I was 14. And it had the Eleanor Mustang and, you know, people getting shot. And there was a bit of a story going on and they were stealing cars. And, you know, I probably quite enjoyed it. If I watched it now, I suspect I'd find it excruciating. But... yeah, well, although there are some great cars in it doing quite cool things, so that's enjoyable. But again, I'm not sure if we're ever going to do another one of these podcasts because I've not seen the original Gone in 60 Seconds either. I suspect you're just going to walk out the door now and find something else to do.
Once you've done your research and seen these films, the thing is you should see it because you'll just have a really good time doing it.
Mm. Okay,
yeah.
Well, there you go. I just need some time to... do it.
Yeah.
Okay. Were there any more that you wanted to talk about?
Italian Jobs. I mean, Italian Job. Please tell me you've seen the Italian Job.
Is that the one with... Yes, I've seen it. I've driven around Lingotto, the roof.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, okay, it's not motor racing. It's all silly. It's all pretty tongue-in-cheek. But actually... the Mini Chase, I think, is one of the greatest car chases that's ever been filmed because it was filmed so creatively, because they didn't just have people, you know, the usual thing where cars sort of go down pavements and, you know, stunt people scatter and, you know, a pile of cardboard boxes and all the usual nonsense they do. They actually thought really hard about all the different scenes, from literally, you know, down in the sewers to up on top of... The Lingotto factory. I just thought it was a really imaginative way to do that. And the minis are just cool. When I first saw it, the film came out in 1969. I probably didn't see it then because I'd only been three. But I was still, you know, I would have been like eight or nine when I saw it for the first time. And when they threw the minis off the back of the bus at the end, I was totally inconsolable. I was just crying my eyes out. I couldn't believe that they'd do that to them.
What about the pretty car that gets
pretty car
off a cliff?
Yeah, that wasn't great either. And of course, when you're that young, of course, it never occurs to you that it's actually not a Lamborghini Miura, and it's just some. In fact, I think it was. I can't remember what was underneath it, but the body was from a. I think it was a Miura body, but one which had already been crashed. I think that's right. And then obviously, the Jags and the Aston as well, and yeah. a lot of nice metal.
Lots of destruction.
But
you're right about the Mini chase sequence, because they really thought about, well, these are Minis. What can these cars do? Things like driving up into the back of the bus.
Yes. Yeah,
they just really thought about, let's make the most of the fact that these are tiny, diddy little cars. Let's send them down the sewers. Let's, you know.
I love that bit where they're going around that car park and they're being chased.
Yeah.
And then suddenly there's sort of wide shot and you see all the police sort of go by, and then suddenly three cars next to each other, which you've seen all the time and you just don't realise they're there, pull out and it's the Minis and they go the other way. I always thought that was a really cool sequence. Yeah.
Okay, you said you wanted to talk about both Italian jobs.
Yeah.
Now, again, I haven't seen the newer one either, but I'm sure you don't have a problem with that. Was it terrible?
Okay, I have to be completely honest with you. I haven't seen all of it.
Okay.
I can't even remember how much of it I have seen, but I stopped pretty shortly. It was just a joke. I can't remember any about it, and frankly, let's sort of move on a bit, because, yeah, really not. I tell you what, I do want to discuss. You must have seen Rush.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I liked it. I mean, obviously, they play fast and loose with the actual narrative.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's fair that Niki Lauda comes out of it a sort of rat-like villainous. He's a hero.
Yeah.
I don't think James Hunt was quite the swashbuckling character that whatever his name portrayed
Who
him
was
as.
It? Was it Liam Hemsworth?
It's one of the Hemsworth. Was it Chris?
It was Chris Hemsworth, yeah. I completely agree with you. I thought the bloke who played Niki Lauda was a really good actor.
Daniel Brühl.
Exactly. And I thought Chris Hemsworth actually did a very good job with a complete cardboard cutout character he'd been given. Totally monodimensional. And actually quite disrespectful to the memory of the man, because, you know, he certainly had that in him, but there was so much more to James Hunt than that. I can remember talking to Jochen Mass, who was his teammate that season. So if anybody knew, Jochen knew. And Jochen is one of the most intelligent, thoughtful, considered, least hysterical people you'll ever meet. And the last person in the world who would, you know, perpetuate a myth because it was cool. And he was just saying, you couldn't be a Formula One driver like that. You know, pissed every night, you know, all night, you know, having sex and getting in a racing car, because he said you'd just be terrible. You'd be really bad at your job. You'd come nowhere if you didn't kill yourself in the process. You had to. And he said, you know, he said he couldn't speak for James in the off season, you know, and he saw that James went off and partied lots when, you know, over the winter. But, you know, all this business about, you know, him turning up, you know, drunk or hungover or, you know, with various girls in tow before getting in the car. He said he never saw it.
Mm.
And he was his teammate. So if anybody in the world would have seen it, it would have been Jochen. And he never saw it. And I just think that, I mean, I kind of understand that that's the sort of box office approach. But it's like, it's my problem with, you must have seen the Queen film, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so my problem with that film, and I only mention it now because that isn't about cars, but it's exactly the same problem that I have with Rush, is what they did, the stories that they created, the exaggerations they made about Freddie Mercury's life, I thought was disrespectful to the memory of the man. Because it was kind of like, and don't forget, it was the band who made that film. It was like saying, oh, Freddie wasn't interesting enough to make a film about, so we'll just invent some stuff and turn him into a person that he wasn't, because then we can put more bums on seats and make more money out of his memory. And I found that, is offensive too strong a word? Yes, offensive is too strong a word, but I found it unfortunate. And I found the portrayal of James Hunt in Rush unfortunate, because I just know that there was, you know, I spoke to, before he died, I was speaking at length to Murray about James. And Murray would say that he hated James when they first met, But over a period of time, when he got to know him and got to understand, you know, the quite complex nature of this man's character, he got a completely different impression. And they were, you know, they were really, really good friends towards the end of it. And I just wish we'd seen a bit more of Hunt's humanity, because I think apart from anything else, I think it would have made for a better film than this sort of, you know, slight, you know, idiot that, you know, he was made out to be. My other problem with it was I kept on watching it and thinking, well, that's Cadwell Park or whatever. That's not the Nürburgring. That's Cadwell Park or whatever. But then, yeah, that's very much a problem for me and you rather than for most people. But I did still enjoy it. I think what they did very, very well was Lauda's sort of fight back after the accident and the hell he went through. I think that was all quite accurate. I think his life was absolutely that close to being lost. I think all the procedures he had to have, I think all that was, and then him coming back 6 weeks later and getting in the car at Monza and everything, I think that was all sort of fair enough. And I guess one of the things that I struggled with a bit is why they, in some regards, were so faithful and accurate, and in other regards, just played so fast and loose with the truth.
Yeah, fair enough. Good. Okay. That was interesting. I've got some homework to do.
Yes.
I need to go and watch some films.
Okay, we're not going to talk about them now, but you need to... Have you watched Duel?
No.
Okay,
so you need to watch Duel. List.
Okay, Duel. So that was Spielberg's first big movie. It's the film he did before Jaws. Okay? And it's basically, it's a bloke in a car being chased by a maniac in a truck. And that's all the film is. That's all the film is. And you never get to see the maniac in the truck. It's just a truck. And it's Hitchcock-like in its suspense. It's an absolutely brilliant film. And you get to see is you get to see it from this man's perspective. And he doesn't understand why this bloke in this truck is trying to kill him.
Bloody hell. That sounds stressful.
Yeah. And there's another one called... And you need to see Vanishing Point as well. We see about a bloke driving a Dodge Challenger across America very fast.
So is that's five films I think I need to go and watch. That's an entire Sunday. But that's fine. That'll be enjoyable.
Cannibal Runs, Gumball Rallies. Don't bother with any of those. So certainly Duel, Vanishing Point, the original Gone in 60 Seconds, Grand Prix and Le Mans. That is your homework.
Okay, I've got my list.
Yes.
I'll start chewing through those as soon as I can. Good. Okay. Well, there we go. Please remember, everybody, to rate and review the podcast. It does make a difference. Lots of you have been doing it, and it really helps. So please keep doing it.
Please.
And the app. We haven't really spoken about the app recently, but there's been some great stuff on there recently. You can go and download it for free and start your free trial. And then it's £5 a month if you want to stick with us, and we think you will, or you can pay £50 for the year. We've got some big plans for the app. I can't say anything more about it now, but we really are putting a lot of work into it, and there's much, much more to come. So please go and check the app out, rate and review the podcast, and we'll be back to talk more car nonsense at you this time next week.
You having watched a few more movies in the meantime. Yes. I shall be quizzing you.
Okay, look forward to it.
Thanks, everyone.